Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Coach Jim Lifford. I'm going to be joined shortly by Coach Ricky Clark on WDCU on the Daniel Clark Radio Network on the Internet, Blog Talk Radio. It's been 2 weeks since we've been on. 2 weeks ago, actually 3 weeks since we've been on. During the summer, we're only doing one show a week. It is Tuesday, July the 9th. It's 8 o'clock p.m. That means it's time to talk sports. 2 weeks ago, we were going to have the Joe Evans, the head football coach at Independence, on the show, but technical difficulties with the Internet precluded that show. I was actually in Europe 1 week ago today, actually Paris to be more specific, for my daughter's graduation from the University of Edinburgh in Scotland. And there were also technical difficulties that week, but we're back with you tonight, and we're going to be talking sports with you for an hour. Looking forward to that. The Players Sporting Goods call-in guest line, 888-689-4061. Once again, that's the Players call-in guest line, 888-689-4061. And we're welcome any calls we got tonight. Looking forward to hearing from you. Looking forward to hearing from Coach Clark. Not a whole lot going on in terms of what I consider real sports, a whole lot of baseball going on. There's nothing wrong with baseball, but I'm not the biggest baseball fan. It's just too long a season, and it's too slow a game for me. But there's a lot of bad news going on in sports right now, and I'm looking through the, you know, information online, looking at the newspaper. I see that, you know, of course, the big story is, you know, Hernandez up with the New England Patriots charged with murder. I see that they're not going to do anything with the baseball steroid problem until after the All-Star break. I see that P.J. Harrison, the star basketball player at the University of North Carolina, is back in the news having to do with issue having to do with a car tied to a fellow accused of some type of drug violation. And, you know, it's just getting more and more disappointing to pick up the paper every day, and the story is not so much about the sport or the people involved in playing their sport. It's the extracurricular stuff, the stuff that takes away from the game, the stuff that I think is disappointing and sets a really, really poor example for young people who follow the game. I mean, you know, people are people, and people are entitled to live their lives any way they want to. But if you're going to put yourself in a position of influence, you're going to put yourself out in that spotlight, you want to be a celebrity, and you choose to be that celebrity. Now, what is wrong with expecting folks who are living the dream to act like they've got some sense? Now, I'm disappointed. I'm really disappointed that every time I turn around, there is some story about performance-enhancing drugs. Folks, that is cheating. There's no other way to put it, and cheating is cheating. No matter how you try to dress it up, no matter how you try to gussy it up, the game is supposed to be played on a level playing field with everybody playing by the same set of rules. Now, the interesting thing is the suspensions, if there are going to be any from the Biogenesis scandal, won't come down until after the All-Star break. And there's probably a very good reason for that, and that reason is money. The All-Star game needs to have the All-Stars in it, and I'm going to be real interested to see how many players participate in the All-Star game and end up with some problems over this scandal. And baseball obviously doesn't want a bunch of suspensions to be hanging over their head to be talked about. They want the story to be the All-Star game. But, you know, when you're hearing more about lawyers and what witnesses, cooperating witnesses have to say than you do about the game that's being played, I think it's a pretty sad statement. What's interesting, too, is I happen to be taking a look at the standing for Major League Baseball. I see Boston is four games ahead of Tampa Bay in the American League East, with Baltimore five games out. And then the New York Yankees are five and a half games out. But the Yankees, 48 and 41, that puts them five and a half out with that big old payroll. In the Central Division, my team, the Detroit Tigers, 49 and 39, 557 winning percentage, are two and a half games ahead of Cleveland. You got to pull for the Indians. Oakland and Texas have, you know, real tight race going on in the West, with Oakland ahead by half a game over Texas. Over in the National League, the Braves are getting it done, 73 winning percentage, 51 and 38. in the Central St. Louis, leading that division by half a game over Pittsburgh. It's good to see Pittsburgh back in that mix. You know, you talk about one of the small markets. I remember when I was a kid, Pittsburgh was in that race every single year. The bad news is that the Chicago Cubs, hard to pull against the Cubbies. They're down at 442 with a 38-48 record. They're 14.5 games out, even though they've won six of their last 10 games. Atlanta's at 47-41 with a 534 winning percentage, and they're 4.5 games ahead of another high payroll roster squad, the Los Angeles Dodgers, and Braves are getting it done. It's going to be real interesting to see how baseball plays out this year and how it's going to be affected by what is the big story on baseball in the Charlotte Observer today, entitled Celebrate First, Punish Second. And that's dealing with, again, the Biogenesis scandal to be handed down after the All-Star break, whatever suspensions are going to come out of that. And what I don't get, and the question that I'd like to ask, is what makes these guys think that they can get away with it? I mean, it is such a hot topic. It is something that everybody's paying a whole lot of attention to. And I'm confused about what makes people think that they're going to not be tested, that they're not going to be caught, that they're not going to be, somebody's not going to rat them out, somebody's not going to try to work off their own jail sentence by telling about what athletes they have provided performance-enhancing drugs to, and it just takes away from the game. I remember about 12 years ago when Mark McGwire was chasing, Roger Maris's home run record. I was actually at a convention in Las Vegas the night that he hit that 60-second home run. And it was such a great moment. I mean, it's highlighted in that film about Roger Maris, 61. And now looking back on it, I just don't think there's anything special about it. The Barry Bonds hit almost 100 home runs. I'm being facetious, but he did hit a lot of home runs, and we find out that he was juicing or was accused of juicing. And, what's that all about? It just seems like, there's one sports scandal after another. And I think it is hurting the game. And that makes me so glad that my involvement with athletics is at the ultimate amateur level, middle school, high school. Sometimes do we all take it too serious? Sure we do. But at the end of the day, at that level, it's still about the game. I've been a North Carolina fan since I was old enough to pull for athletic teams. I'll never forget one of the very first games that I ever listened to was North Carolina beating Vanderbilt in the college football game back in Bill Dooley's second or third season as the head coach at Chapel Hill. North Carolina beat Vanderbilt by a score of 10-8. Pretty sure that was a score. I listened to it on the radio. There wasn't a whole lot of television. We got air one college football game in per week, and that very seldom involved a team from the ACC and almost never involved North Carolina. I don't think that I saw North Carolina live until I went to a Carolina-Duke game that same year. North Carolina upset Duke to go 2-8, and it was the start of something special during the Dooley years at North Carolina. And that was the time where college athletes were students. They were students first, and they played their athletic competition second. Where that has led us to is what I consider to be a little bit of an unhealthy and scary situation, at least superficially, that's how it appears, that one of the top players at the University of North Carolina, who is a great success story, a young man who, by his own admission, will tell you that if it wasn't for basketball, he would probably be living a different life. Well, maybe and maybe not, because if the stories that are coming out are true, and he's driving a car that is in some way tied to a fella, who's a convicted felon, a felon named Thomas, who had a felony conviction in 2006, he pled guilty to the felony charge of access to computers, which I guess means identity theft. And now, I believe, is under some type of charges for a drug possession. Here to see exactly what it says. It says that this fellow whose name he is Hayden Fats Thomas is awaiting trial on felony charges of possession and possession with intent to sell a controlled substance, weed, marijuana. And I just got to ask this question. If you have a scholarship to a major university anywhere in America, whether it's North Carolina, if it's Duke, whether it's Alabama, Ohio State, El Paso State, Boise State, wherever, why would you want to put that at risk? I just don't understand that mentality. Is being a college athlete not enough for you? Is it not good enough for you? And unfortunately, it seems that the answer to that question is unfortunately not. But P.J. Harrison apparently received a speeding ticket on May the 13th while he was driving a car that was rented by an associate of this Thomas fella. And this is the same fella who had rented the SUV Harrison was driving when he was arrested in June. And if you're the University of North Carolina, and I think North Carolina is suffering from an image problem right now with all the academic scandal, the bogus classes, the preferential treatment that athletes apparently are accused of receiving at the University of North Carolina. At what point is enough enough? Because the choices that young people make matter. You know, it might be time to get our friend Brian Mack back on this show. Brian is, of course, a star guard at at Garinger High School, led Garinger to a state championship. And Brian, by his own admission, will tell you that he made some really poor choices that caused him to end up serving a federal prison sentence. Brian has completely reformed his life and now is a mentor for young people and coaches basketball, including his own son. And he's talked to us on the show about the choices that he made and the consequences of those choices. So, you know, I cannot emphasize on this show enough that the choices that we make do matter, and that it's very important for young people to make the right choices, because being an athlete is not a ticket that, or a pass, if you will, to allow you to be on the outside of the law. And while, again, I'm looking through the paper today, more bad news. Listen to this. Police in northern Brazilian state of Maranhão are searching for two men suspected of taking part in the slaying and beheading of an amateur soccer referee who stabbed a player to death during a match. I'm going to read that again because that's just an amazing sentence. Police are searching for two men suspected of taking part in the slaying and beheading of an amateur soccer referee who stabbed a player to death during a match. Now, I've heard of some bizarre things happening at a soccer game. I have never heard, and I've been around some incidents at athletic events that got a little bit out of hand. I've actually seen some fights. I've seen games called off because there were fights in the stands. A long time ago, an Independence West Charlotte game concluded with about 6-7 minutes left in the fourth quarter because of the pretty bizarre conduct of some people in the stands, and everybody decided they'd seen enough. It's time to go home, so they did. But an amateur soccer referee stabbed a player to death during a match. I would like to know what in the world that's about. Apparently somebody didn't think a whole lot of that because the referee has now been murdered and his head was cut off. Now, that is, folks, it's just an ugly day in sports. Or maybe it's just that's all the news that's out there, because it's pretty remarkable to me the bad news that we continue to get about what is going on with our professional athletes and even some of our college athletes. You know, we've heard all week about the alleged scandal down in Florida, the lack of attention paid by the football office under Urban Meyer at the University of Florida, with our number of arrests over a 5-year period. And you just have to wonder what is driving all this. And I'm going to answer that question so there's no doubt. Now, let me say this. I learned a long time ago that my opinion is only relevant to me. And I try to be as right as I can possibly be, but I recognize that it's just as likely that I am as wrong as I want to be right. As long as athletics is about money, and money is the driving force, you're going to have issues in the game. And that's where I think these issues and these problems come from. I think that college athletics has become such big business that colleges are compromising their academic and conduct standards to have in school the types of athletes that you have to have apparently to be competitive at a Division I level. I'm not going to say this coach's name, but I was talking to a college coach who was building the program about 20 years ago, and he told me that he was going to win and he was going to win big, but that at the end of the day, we wouldn't like the people that he had to bring in to win games with. And it turns out that he was right. Every single day, we seem to find that more and more young men, and you don't see these types of things in the women's sports. You just don't see. I cannot think of the last time that I heard about a scandal involving any of the NCAA women's programs. I'm sure there have been some schools with some recruitment violations, but I just cannot think of any scandal coming out of a women's sports program at any university. And if anybody can think of one, correct me, call in on the Players Sporting Goods guest calling line at 888-689-4061 and fill me in. But the men's programs just seem to be so susceptible to those types of issues. Is, we were talking about money. Alford Dale at UCLA. Steve Alford is the new basketball coach at UCLA. And if they want to get rid of Coach Alford, they're going to have to give him a $10.4 million buyout. That's in his contract. To fire a guy, they have to pay him $10.4 million, which is remarkable. Now, they're going to be paying Coach Alford. He had an $850,000 signing bonus and going to make $2.6 million a year to coach a game. Well, that $2.6 million has to come from somewhere, and it's going to come from the revenue that is generated by UCLA Athletics. And I don't know. I really wish that I had a good answer for how we could get control of all of what is going on and the television contracts, the money that is involved, the expense that's involved, the revenue that is generated, and how we're just so willing to compromise great games in pursuit of that dollar. I have yet to hear from Coach Ricky Clark. Hope that Ricky is not detained and able to join me tonight. When you're an athletic director at middle school, sometimes your situation, sometimes it controls you instead of you controlling it. So if it's just going to be me tonight, I'm okay with that. I'll welcome your call if you're listening on a call in on the Players guest calling line. That is 888-689-4061. And while I'm talking about Players, that's at 5737 Lane Street in Charlotte, North Carolina. And they have all kinds of stuff. They have team needs. But if you want to get something ordered for football, now football starts in about a month. Practices start. High schools are working out now. They're doing their summer workouts and whatnot. And so we're about to start an exciting time of high school athletics and high school football. So we're going to be looking forward to that. But if you have team needs, get up with the folks at Player Sporting Goods. Call David, call Colt, call Denise, call over there. Get your order in because athletic equipment is not jump off a shelf and takes a while to make that stuff happen. So let's get on the stick and get everything ordered if you have a need. But they'll be happy to take care of your needs over there.
And
had an opportunity to be on the more civilized side of sports last week. So when I was in My daughter graduated from the University of Edinburgh with her PhD in British history, so I'm very proud of that. But we had a chance to go over there. Flew over a week ago Saturday and got to London, a beautiful city. That's big soccer country, and their stadiums are huge, hold about 90,000 people. But we happened to be there at the same time that one of them was going on. And it's a good time to be British, and I'll tell you why, because at this time last year in August, you know, London hosted the Summer Olympics, and Andy Murray won the gold medal at Wimbledon. Huge moment for him. He also just won at Wimbledon, becoming the first British tennis player to win Wimbledon, and the first male British tennis player to win Wimbledon in 77 years. The interesting thing about Andy Murray is he's from Scotland, so he's a Scot. And they will tell you over there that when he wins, he's British. When he loses, finishes second or less, he's a Scot. It's kind of interesting, the dynamics over that. But we were in Edinburgh when he was playing, which is the capital of Scotland, and one of the ancient cities in the Western civilization. Beautiful castle up on top of what they used to call Dunedin, which just means the hill, city on the hill. Amazing fortress at the top of that hill. And if you ever get a chance to go to Edinburgh, beautiful town, old town. It's the seat of ancient Scotland, but they're very proud of Andy Murray over there, this Scottish hero who just won Wimbledon. And the interesting thing is, when you are that far north, it doesn't get dark until about 11 o'clock. It's getting dark about 9:15-ish in Charlotte. But over there, you've got another hour and a half of good daylight left. It starts getting dusk around 10:45. It's dark about 11. Sun comes up, starts lighting up the sky at about 3:30 in the morning. That took a little bit of getting used to. But we were on I've always seen these double-decker buses with no top on them, the tour buses, and I always thought that was a kind of a too touristy thing, but we decided we were going to do that. It was really a great way to see that great city. But we went by a couple of places, pubs, and there were just these incredibly large crowds. I mean, 200-300 people sitting at tables, and they were watching Wimbledon. They were watching the tennis match. More specifically, they were watching the semifinals. This would have been on Friday. They were watching the semifinals where Andy Murray was fighting his way into the finals that he ultimately won at Wimbledon this past Sunday. And it was really kind of interesting watching the people watch tennis in that way, because I can tell you I have never seen that many people in one place in the United States sitting there to watch a tennis match. And my guess is if Scott hadn't been in those semifinals, that crowd wouldn't have been as thick as it actually was. But it's real interesting over there. It's hard to cut on a television and not see soccer being played. And it's they call it the beautiful game. Of course, I have never particularly warmed up to soccer. I frankly like the women's soccer better. It's a lot more fun following the U.S. Women's Olympic team than it is men, at least for me, even though I'll have to say that my youngest daughter played soccer, and my wife has become quite a soccer fan. And so we watched a lot of the World Cup, and it was exciting seeing the United States team go as far as they did, which is about as far as they've ever gone in that event, that tournament. You're getting ready for it again. And yet, as I understand it, the World Cup and the Olympics are going to be played in Brazil. And yet, there have been riots in Brazil surrounding the construction of these facilities. And in Brazil, we have referees stabbing soccer players and then getting murdered and beheaded in that country. So you just have to wonder if they actually made the right choice to take it to Brazil. I certainly hope so. But at the end of the day, it's about games. It's about athletics and the lessons that people can learn from athletics. It's about becoming a better person. It's about improving your skills. It's about taking advantage of the talent that God has given you. It's not about you, though. It's not about the money. And maybe I'm a dinosaur, a fossil, a relic of a time past, but I still believe such things. But I do believe those things. I believe with complete sincerity what I am telling you here, that I think it still should be about people playing a game that they're good at because they're good. there are just too many folks that are playing the game today, using the game as a means to an end, where I see the game itself as the end. We do a lot of tournament ball at James Martinville. Sometimes when teams are not in the championship bracket for the tournament, where people say, well, this is the meaningless game. I don't believe that there is such a thing as a meaningless game, and I wish that people would say that. I certainly wish they wouldn't feel that way, because every time that our young people are out there playing and participating in an event, that gives them an opportunity to improve themselves, improve their athletic skills, show off their athletic skills. I don't think that's meaningless. But that's just me. I'm just old Coach Joe Redford, about to start my 42nd season of coaching. And it seems like just yesterday I was coaching the kickoff team, the kickoff receiving team, and the defensive backs at Northeast Junior High School back in the fall of 1973. Seems like an eternity ago. But be that as it may, we're about to start and get ready for high school football, and the Panthers are gearing up. They've got their camp starting in about 2 weeks, and the question that is being asked is, what is it that the Panthers need to do offensively to get better? And that was the big discussion on talk radio today. What advice do we have for the new offensive coordinator, Shula, here at, for the Panthers? And I was listening to what folks had to say, and it's interesting to compare a coach's perspective to a fan's perspective. And I'm a fan, but more than that, actually, I'm not a very good fan. I don't like watching athletic events as much as I enjoy participating. He's never picked a good athlete, but I've had some success as a coach. But as I hear people talk about what it is the Panthers need to do specifically, what the Panthers need to do is win the line of scrimmage. How do they become a better football team? By winning both lines of scrimmage. They need to be able to play defense against the run with four linemen. You'll recall on this show that Rod Smith said they needed to go get two big old strong guys to be middle stoppers. They've done that, so hopefully they should be a lot better on defense to allow the linebackers to do the things linebackers do, and that is not be substitutes for a defensive lineman getting pushed around all over the field. On the offensive side of the ball, what the Panthers need to do is to make sure that their five people beat their four people or their three people. How many times have you seen in a pro game teams going with a three-man defensive front, yet they're pressuring the passer, they're pressuring the quarterback, making him move around, throw the ball early, throw it to people who didn't really want to. And that speaks volumes. And I'm going to tell you what the key to being good in your offensive and your defensive lines is: having smart people. I keep going back to one of the things that I think one of the great guests on this program, Ron Smith, has to say. He's always talking about smart athletes. Ron's a pretty smart guy. Played at Notre Dame, and you got to be a pretty smart cookie to get into Notre Dame. By the way, I saw the real Notre Dame Cathedral a week ago today. Beautiful facility. I mean, ancient building, stained glass windows. I mean, just a beautiful place to be. Paris is truly a remarkable and beautiful city. A lot of history, a lot of architectural wonders, a lot of art wonders. Didn't have time to go into the Louvre. Would like to have done that, but the day trip. So we hit the highlights. But smart athletes tend not to make mistakes. And if you are seeing five linemen, center and guard, tackle, getting beat by three or four defensive linemen, there are several reasons why they might be getting beat. One is the guy on the other side just might be better. And sometimes that's the case, and there's no shame in that. Sometimes the athlete that you line up against is just a better athlete. That athlete is able to do more things than you are. He's got more skills. He's faster. He's physically stronger. Those are things that you can't change during the game. If he's just better than you, he's just better than you. You can do things to slow him down. But more times than not, at that level, most of these guys are on the pretty same level, so they're either out of shape or they're missing assignments. Rod pointed out that at Notre Dame, when they got beyond the blue chip, the 3- and 4-star recruits, they would recruit the smartest athletes available at the position. And everything else is equal. They looked at GPA and the kids' conduct in the classroom. And so that made a huge difference for them, and I think it will make a huge difference for the Panthers. I think I'm joined by Coach Clark now. Ricky, do I have you?
You do.
Okay, well, welcome to the show. I've been talking about a lot of things. I don't mind telling you. I've been expressing some frustration about the baseball steroids, about P.J. Harrison driving around a car that is rented by a fellow on trial, or about to be on trial for possession of intent to sell and deliver a controlled substance, to wit, marijuana. I am not using my usual telephone setup just because I'm having all kinds of technical difficulties over here tonight, so I'm using the old Verizon cell phone, so I hope you're hearing me pretty clear enough. Ricky, I was talking about a story. I don't know if you saw in the paper. We're going to come back to it, and then we'll come back to the Panthers. I'm going to read this again because I find this amazing. I want you to listen to this. I want you to listen to this until I get to it. Police in the northern Brazilian state of Maranhão are searching for two men suspected of taking part in the slaying and beheading of an amateur soccer referee who stabbed a player to death during a soccer match. I have read some bizarre sentences in my time, especially as a criminal defense attorney. We get what's called discovery, and Ricky, I don't mind telling you, I have read some interesting statements of fact. The two men are suspected in taking part in the murder and beheading of an amateur referee, soccer referee, who stabbed a player to death during a match. Have you ever heard of anything that bizarre happening in an athletic event? That sounds like
talking
out of a bad movie about pro wrestling.
Neil, Joe, I was having a conversation. Are you still there?
Yes.
Okay. I was having a conversation with somebody just this week, and we were just talking about, and it might have been you. You remember we were talking about soccer, and I made a statement about the two soccer teams that were playing. They got a little rough. And I think, are you still there?
Yeah, I got you, Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah. And I made a statement that, you know, that if that was in this country, and I think we were looking at some professional soccer teams here, but
yeah.
I'm blown away by the violence that's displayed at some of these soccer events in these other countries. And I think I said to you, if that was the United States, they wouldn't play that game. They just wouldn't. If people are bringing bats and sticks, shanks and all this stuff into the stadium, you know, and if they're
then they're going to jail.
you can't even
bring mace in your pocket.
They almost act like if you don't bring it, there's something wrong with you.
You're at your own risk, undefended.
Oh my goodness! I've never heard anything like so. So it's not just limited to the fans. It's, you know, if a referee is going to, an umpire official going to stab a player to death, what in the world?
I mean, Ricky, I'm laughing. There's nothing funny about it. But I'm just laughing at I hate to say this, Coach, but today looking through the paper, you know, I mean, okay, there's no football going on. There's no NBA playoffs going on. There's one out of about, you know, 164 baseball games being played, you know, in the course of the season. I've got the All-Star break coming up. But, of course, they're not going to announce their suspensions for steroid or, well, I'm not going to say steroids, but for some performance-enhancing drugs. You know, I mean, Coach, it just wears me down. It truly wears me down because it's a game. That's all it is.
Yep.
It is a game. It's supposed to be entertainment. At the end of the day, it's really no different than going and buying a ticket and watching a movie, you know, except we know how the movie's going to end because it's already been filmed and it's already done. I mean, we might not know while it's happening, but, you know, I mean, more times than not, we know it's going to be a good ending. Superman's going to beat the bad guys. You know, the the Transformers are going to fight off the bad Transformers. I mean, we know how it's going to end. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's just an athletic event, and you know, when you think about the amount of time that you and I put in our adult lives into providing opportunities, coaching opportunities for you know youngsters to take advantage of their athletic skills, yeah, Ricky, what's gone wrong? What has you know? I mean, or am I just too old, and are my expectations just too much?
I don't, and you know, Joe, I forever has always thought that soccer were not among one of the largest sports in the world. But I think I've been wrong. When you look at the venues that they play in, all of those stadiums hold over 100,000 people. I'm like, you know, that's controlled chaos. So really, lack of thereof, there is no control there. And I was looking at, you know, caught on tape or caught on video or something, and they literally show a melee because one soccer player took the legs from under another one as he was going in to score. They never did do the penalty kick. I mean, both sides of the stands empty. And I mean empty with bats and, you know, at no point in the United States would that have been allowed to happen. You can't have more policemen out there than you have fans when the stadium holds 100,000 people. And I said that. That just would have been a game that they would not have played. It would just have been a game that they could not have played.
Well, let's change subjects. Let's talk about something a little bit more positive, and that is how good the Panthers are going to be this year, because I think they're going to be a lot better. And, you know, well, actually, before we get to the Panthers, what did you think of the Bobcats draft of Cody Zeller? We haven't talked, been on the net since the NBA draft. You know, the Bobcats or the Hornets, whatever they call themselves these days, picked the 7-footer, Cody Zeller. You know, really quality college player. Do you think that's a good fit? And what, you know, because they passed up a couple of pretty good big men, you know, and they passed the popular choices. And I'm not telling you, Coach, I was over at Boardwalk Billy's when that draft selection was announced, and people booed. I heard booing at all.
Really?
Yes. I mean, yeah, I'm sorry. You know, the big kid Lim from Maryland was in a boot. You know, the big kid Noel from Norton's Noel from Kentucky coming off an injury. You know, Coach, I just don't know that you can use a top four pick on damaged goods. I'm sorry. First of all, it's not my money. So I'm not the guy that's having to sign the contract. I'm not the guy who's having to pay these players. But I'm not going to use a top four pick on a guy who may or may not ever play a game in the league. You know, is Greg Oden still playing? I mean, I don't follow a game enough to Greg Oden, I mean, he was all-world at Ohio State, number one draft choice, and broke a bone in, I think, their preseason, some of their summer league. And, Richie, that's the last I've heard of him. Now, you know I don't follow the NBA, but you know, I just don't remember whether I cannot tell you if that guy's still playing. Whereas Cody Zeller's healthy, he's big, he's a big body, he can go outside, he can shoot. He's going to be coached by one of the great centers of all time, Patrick Ewing. And you know, you just got to figure that Ewing is going to make him better. And plus, Coach, he's not the kind of guy who's going to embarrass that organization. He's probably the kind of guy who's going to be thrilled to be there. We're not going to read about him, you know, doing stupid, ridiculous things. He's not going to dope. He's just going to go out and probably work as hard as he possibly can and have himself a pretty good NBA career. And that's the kind of guy that, frankly, I would want in my organization. How about you?
Yeah, and Joe, he creates a matchup problem for everyone. He's a 7-footer. He's a 7-footer. that can put the ball on the floor like a point guard. You understand?
And he'll run that floor.
Yeah. And thank you. He can run up and down the floor with the best best 3 and 4 position in the league. That's an awesome pick. That's an awesome pick. The athletes now have become so good, Joe, at professional basketball that now it's all about creating mismatches when you're out there playing. Why do people think Michael Jordan was so great? He was 6'6". He's a 6'6 point guard. You know, you put a 6'1", 6'8", 6'1 guy on him, he just shoots over the top. I'll never forget when Jordan came here to play the Hornets, because we were the Hornets then, and we had Muggsy, and it was almost comical that when they switched up, Muggsy had to guard him. Well, after Muggsy stole the ball from him a couple of times, what Jordan started doing was Jordan would get to a spot, pass for the ball, and take his jump shot. Muggsy couldn't block it. You know,
no.
that's creating a mismatch. Zeller brings the exact same thing to the game, except he's 7 feet. So you got your center parked down in that paint. Unless you put another 7-footer on him, he is so accurate, 15 feet and in, that, you know, you can't put a 4 on him. He's just going to shoot over the top of it. You can't put a guard on him. He's just going to put the ball on the floor and get in the paint. I think it's an awesome pick. You know, some people still get caught up with the way that Miami built a championship team, the way that New York tried to build a championship team. Back in the day, teams and franchises, they drafted players to build the teams that they want. They didn't go out and buy players from another team. You know, and I think, and you know me and the Bobcats and how I disagree with a lot of things that they've done. But I think this was perfect. I think this was perfect. You're going to draft your way into becoming a very good team, and that's the way it should be. You shouldn't go out and now you're worrying about salary caps and you got to get rid of this player and that player and this player and that player. I was looking at what was going on out at Golden State with Curry and the kid that played from Carolina. God, what is that boy's name? Deadly Street Barnes. Harrison Barnes. Those guys, that franchise has the right idea. They have drafted their way into a very competitive team. And I'm telling you, the only reason they were out of this tournament this year is because they're just young. Those are young guys.
Well, I think you're right. They're a force to be. Coach, let's change direction and talk about the Panthers, because the NBA is a long ways off for us. They don't start up to November. We've got the Panthers going to camp in 2 weeks. And the big topic today on talk radio in Charlotte was, what advice would you give to, you know, the offensive coordinator? And I actually called in to the fan today, and I told him, here's what I said they needed to do. If they want to be better offensively, win the line of scrimmage. Keep them on their side of the ball and push them back. Second, they need to run more of what I call shoot patterns with a tight end that is running right down the middle of the field. If they're in man coverage or if even in zone coverage, make that zone side linebacker or that strong safety or linebacker who's locked on to the tight end go deep with him, and make the free safety choose between whether picking up and giving help to the tight end. And with that, running more longer pass routes, you know, I say longer pass routes, you and I would say they need to, you know, need to push the ball down the field more. And the other thing I think they need to do is I think they need to throw more off that zone read, and I think that'll make it a lot more effective. Now, I started out my comments by saying I would tell, you know, Coach Shula nothing he didn't already know. He knows he's got to win that line of scrimmage. He knows he needs to get his tight end more involved, not just running out routes, but actually running down the middle of the field, confusing the zone, finding seams in the zone, or taking people in man coverage away from their run support. And I think that, you know, if you think about the tight end, you think about Gonzalez, you think about, you know, Dave Casper with Oakland. Remember how good he was about dictating to the defense. And I think with the tight end position, you can dictate to the defense. But at the end of the day, Ricky, for the Panthers to be effective offensively this year, they're going to have to be strong enough on the corners and strong enough pushing the ball down the field, whether it's the wide receivers or their tight ends, so that people can't park eight people in the box. Because if you've got a quarterback standing in the gun, you've got a back right next to him, that back doesn't get a run and start. You know that? That's the beautiful thing about the I formation. That back gets a run and start. This is a start-go type thing. And it's not as effective as the I. But then again, the I is tough to run in the pros unless you've got a monster defensive line. But, Ricky, you cannot try to block seven people or eight people with five. You just can't do it. And so, you know, I think it always does come back to that offensive line. And how many times do we see people able to put eight people in coverage or seven people in coverage because they're four down linemen up front and just whooping the Panthers around here? Coach?
Okay. Get me on your phone. I'm going to get off my cell phone, okay?
Hello, caller. I got a caller coming in here.
Yeah, you got. I just changed line.
Okay, so that's Coach Clark again. Let me clear out that other line for you then. You know, Ricky, have I got you back with me now?
You do.
Okay. So that's what I think the Panthers have to do to be better offensively. What do you think? What do they need to do? What advice do you have for the offensive coordinator, Coach Shula?
Well, Joe, don't. My advice to them, everything that you said is 100% accurate, but you brought in a speedster. You brought in a speedster with hands. So if you don't attack the defense by using him, then what you're trying to do with your tight end is not going to work because that safety is just going to sit down there. This kid that they brought in, that wide receiver and punt returner, he's fast enough to get behind a lot of people. Make them play him. You know, you can't double-team everybody on the field. And I still think that at some point, they should set up something where Cam Newton still have a run-pass option. Because now you're almost playing 12 on 11. You know, you got with Cam, when you factor Cam into the offense, you're right. The teams that have been successful in this league are teams that have had good tight end play. The Panthers have them on the roster, Joe. They have the offensive line. And good Lord, I've said this over and over. I am very impressed with the Panthers making a commitment to running the football. Because if you look at the beef that they bought in, kids that can pass block and run block. And they brought in kids that can stop the other team from running the football on the Panthers. They brought in a DB. They brought in a corner that's going to give some of the veteran players a run for their money. You know, if I don't have anybody coming in off the bench behind me, I can have a bad game. I can have a bad practice. You're going to still put me out there. And I don't think that's going to be the case this year. I say you got a kid that has recorded among the top fastest kids in the league and have good hands. I say put a pressure on the defense there. When they double team, now you release your tight end. You got to pick your poison. Are you going to leave people in to cover the back? You're going to leave people in to cover the quarterback? You're going to cover the tight end? You got Steve Smith on the other side. You're going to double cover him? You're going to single cover him? I'm extremely excited about this season. I cannot wait, Joe.
Well, I'm sort of looking forward to it. You know, one of the things that we talked about once before on this show, and I'm not, again, you know, I was out of the country this past week, and, they interviewed a backup linebacker on one of the shows today, and it still sounds to me like they're talking about Thomas Davis, Luke Kuechly, and John Beeson. Coach, who are they going to play in the middle? And who would you play in the middle?
Wherever Kuechly lined up this past season,
that's where he would line up again, because he led the team, and I think he finished second.
He led the league.
Yeah,
he led the league
okay.
in tackles. He led the league in tackles.
So if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know,
what about
I'm
the
sorry.
Ego? What about the ego? What about John Beeson's ego? Because, you know, historically that's his position, and he's perceived it as his position.
Historically, he spent most of the season broke.
That's true.
Yeah, he spent most of the season broke. So it's no different than in college. You know, you standing around praying that the guy playing in front of you go down, and you could love him to death, but you praying that when he go down, he don't get up right away. So once I get out there, that's my position for him to take back. And I say put Kingsley back out there and let Beeson earn that position back or play another position.
You know, Coach, and I tell you, so I agree with you 100%. And the one thing that I disagree with the professional athlete mentality is that it's somebody's position. I like the bench. And again, here's the old coach, the old stodgy guy, saying every week, every position is at risk. And I promise you, under Vince Lombardi, every single week, you had to not only – earn that position, you had to keep it, because if you didn't, somebody else is going to take it from you. And there is this notion that, okay, the injured guy's coming off injury, it's time to let him have his spot back. Oh, no. I think that it is time to quit worrying about the egos of athletes, Coach.
Yeah, look what happened up in San Fran. You know, that was nothing,
mm-hmm.
really. That was nothing wrong with San Fran's back quarterback. He got a nick here and a bump there, and they replaced him. And that kid took him to the Super Bowl.
He did. And frankly, you know,
yep.
I mean, going back to the debate we've had on this show before, if it's pass interference on the second play of the game, it's pass interference on the last play of the game. And the replay of that clearly shows that the guy got pushed into the stand. First and goal from the one with one more play to go in the Super Bowl. I'm sorry. You know, that's not, you know, let the players decide it. Well, let the players decide it within the rules. But I'm going to get off that soapbox because we've got 7 minutes left, and that's a fuss I'm sure we're going to have as this season comes up. But, you know, Ricky, I'm convinced that the Panthers have the opportunity to be special this year. I think they had the opportunity to be special last year. And frankly, I think if they don't have that fumble against Atlanta, I think if they pick up that first down and if they play any pass defense and win that football game, I think it's a different season for the Panthers. I really do. I'm not trying to make excuses for them. But, you know, one of the things that I was saying earlier about the time you were calling out, I was talking about offensive line play. Yeah, and I think this is a point that people don't understand about college football. You see teams disappear in the fourth quarter, and I tell you who's horrific about that is Clemson. Now, when Danny Ford was the head football coach at Clemson, Clemson football teams did not disappear in the fourth quarter. They kicked your tail in the fourth quarter. And the reason for that, there was a guy that worked out with Coach Rusty Jester and myself at Independence, and Jesse Hatcher. He played what they call it Clemson, the bandit position. It's just Luke Settle linebacker. We call it the wheel. Some people call it whatever. But they called it bandit. Jesse told me that they had a coach whose only function was to watch film to count the number of people around the ball when the whistle blew. And if they didn't have 5 people around the ball every single play, even pass plays, Coach, they ran the steps at Memorial Stadium. And Jesse told me it didn't take you but a few times running those steps at Clemson in 96-degree heat in August and September to realize it's a heck of a lot easier to hustle to the ball on a given play and on the next play than it is to run those steps. And he said that they averaged running the steps at Clemson 8 times, and this was every single practice. Okay, every single practice, they would do that. So Clemson was in good physical shape. And, Ricky, I am told that athletes even have written into their contract that physical conditioning is a matter of their own discretion. Well, I think that's ridiculous, because if you are not in shape in the fourth quarter, you're in trouble. And I think you can tell it. I think when you see teams disappear in the fourth quarter, people say it's they're choking. There's certainly an element of that. But, Ricky, I think more times than not, I think guys are just out of juice. And you think I'm wrong on that?
No, Joe, think about it. You think about how many times we've seen a running back break one for 60 yards, and they got to about carry him off the field, and he got to get oxygen. Or we've seen a kickoff, a guy run a kickoff back from about the 2-yard line, a 3-yard line, and score a touchdown, a 99-yard touchdown, and he can hardly stand up, and he's got to get over on the sideline. They got to put the oxygen mask on him. I believe it is 100% accurate. They're not.
Yet, at James Martin Middle School, we'll have a kid pop one for 60 yards, score. We might get him the ball on the 2-point try. He will be on the kickoff team, and he'll certainly be playing defense for us.
And if you
so
try to take him out, he gets mad.
If a middle school kid can do it, why can't a pro?
Yeah, he gets mad. It has changed, and you think about conditioning. And we had this conversation a long time ago when we first went on the air, and we were talking about, one reason the Vikings were so good and the Packers were so good is because it was so cold when you went up there to play them, and cold weather takes more energy out of you than hot weather. Those guys.
People don't realize that, but it absolutely does.
Yeah, they were never gassed in the fourth quarter. They were out. They was used to that weather, but they were in excellent condition. Joe, you know this. I remember it was shameful for a running back to run out of bounds. It was absolutely shameful. Now you don't.
Well, somebody else would be carrying the ball on the next play.
Let's
talk about the flip side of that for a second. We talk about teams going up to Green Bay and old Minnesota when they played outdoors, Detroit when they used to play outdoors, New York still plays outdoors. But, Ricky, I think that Southeastern Conference and Southern California teams and even Texas teams have an advantage in Southern Bowl games because, and now mind you, I think that Alabama is just a lot better than Notre Dame. I mean, I don't think it made that huge a difference in that game, but Ricky, I'm going to tell you, let's say you're the Iowa Hawkeyes, and you know, your last game is right before Thanksgiving. You're not playing a bowl game until the last couple of days of December, first cut day or two in January. You're going to practice. You're going to take a couple of weeks off, light condition. Then you're going to come back to the University of Iowa, and you're going to be working out on probably 40, 50-degree days, maybe colder. The next thing you know, you're on a plane. You're flying to Orlando or to Tampa or Miami to play in one of those bowl games. And I tell you something, having just gone through a weather change, going from 90-something in Charlotte to 60-something in Scotland and in London, Ricky, it makes a huge difference on your body. And so I think the Big Ten teams have always been at a disadvantage having to go way down south to play those bowl games. Well, Coach, we're down to about 80 seconds, so I'm going to give you 1 minute to give us your view on the news of the day, and then we're going to finish because our producer tells us we've been running over and getting cut off, and I promised him we wouldn't do that. And that's a picture. You got about 70 seconds. What have you got to say?
But Coach, I spent the better part of the morning hauling around one of our former players, a kid named Devin Jones, and he's kind of caught in between a rock and a hard place where he's moving into Butler's district on the 20th, and right now he's practicing with Vance. And, he asked the question, should I tell the coach at Vance that on the 20th I'll be going over to Butler? I said, absolutely, Devin. I said, it's about your integrity. I said, and here's the thing. If that coach over at Vance tell you that you can't come to his practice anymore, then that's about his character. That's not about your character, because you got to move wherever your parents move. And lo and behold, sure enough, he did. He I took him by Vance, and he talked with the coach, and the coach said, absolutely, you come out here and you practice on the 20th. Once you move over there, you cannot practice with us anymore. You have to start practicing there. So, that kind of renewed my faith in our profession, and it renewed my faith in a kid that wanted to be honest. He didn't want to practice over there then disappear one day. So I ended up taking him out there to Butler today and showing him around, and he met a few people. Butler's football team is at a training camp, and they will be at camp all week, so he didn't really get to talk to anybody. But I felt good about the whole process today, and he was very thankful. His parents was very thankful.
Well, Coach, that's all the time we got tonight, and so we'll be back live with you 1 week from tonight. That'll be Tuesday, July the 16th at 8 o'clock p.m. on Daniel Clark Network Radio, WDCU, Blog Talk Radio on the Internet. He's Coach Ricky Clark. I'm Coach Joe Leopard, and we'll talk with you 1 week from tonight.